It's His, really. Today I'm going to talk about the gift and the giver. You know that I have for a while been preaching messages on financial responsibility, giving, but not very much about money to the church. I've been talking about your life and about giving your talents, giving your time, giving your treasure. These, especially these three areas of who we really are and how important it is that we give and that our attitude about giving be right. So from Luke 6 and verse 38 today, I will talk about the gift and the giver. Some things are inseparable, like water and wet, ice. Somehow it has to do with freezing, doesn't it? You see the connection. There's always a connection. And there's this connection between givers and giving. Always. You cannot separate some things. They just are that way. They go together. One is directly affected by the other. By now, surely, those of us who've been in this church and those who read the Word of God, the Bible, this is His Word, know that we are stewards. We're not owners. We're just stewards. Nothing we have really belongs to us. And death ultimately will come, and it will make the reality that we're not owners very obvious to all those who are still around. Our assignment from God is to manage His resources. That's what we're here to do. And we're to do that in accordance with His wishes, not how we think it ought to be done, but according to how He thinks it ought to be done. And in spite of how good a job we think we could do with it, I assure you that none of us could ever do as good a job as God would have us do. He knows more about how to make us happy, and to meet our needs, and to make us useful than we do. So yielding to Him is not that we're somehow giving up something that we need and ought to keep. We're really doing ourselves a favor when we allow God to be the boss of our lives and we use His resources the way He wants them used. And let me say, His wishes about how to use time, talent, and treasure, these three areas of who we are and what we have, are not secret. Not like somehow we don't know how He wants His resources to be used. He's made it loud and clear that we are to be liberal givers and that the resources He's entrusted to us are to be given liberally, and we're not to be hoarders. You know what a hoarder is? Somebody who hoards, somebody who tries to get it and keep it and not willing to give. Stinginess and greed and covetousness are to never characterize us as people of God, as Christian people. They're to never characterize us. We're to be known for generosity and not for stinginess. Giving impacts many things, including the giver. I want to say that. I want it to soak in like a liniment today. No one can escape the impact of your attitude toward giving. None of us can get away from it, like that water and wet stuff. Your attitude and approach toward giving is going to make a profound difference in your life for the better or for the worse, because we all have an attitude about giving. Some people say, well, I do not have a philosophy. I do not believe in philosophy. Well, hello. Your philosophy is that you do not believe in philosophy. You just can't get around the reality that every one of us has some beliefs about certain things. And certainly, we all have some beliefs about how we use the resources that we have, these that I've been mentioning here. If you're a stingy getter who gives little or nothing, you are certain to become poor and lean in many ways, both here and hereafter. I suspect if you've watched The Scrooge or The Grinch That Stole Christmas or some of those, you got to know that you can have lots of money and be very poor and be very lean. Just because you have a big fat tummy doesn't mean that you have a good fat life in the right sense of the word. Yeah, just having And being stingy is going to make us lean if we don't have the right attitude. If you're an unselfish giver, you're certain to become rich in many ways, both here and hereafter. And I'm going to talk about some of those ways that we can be rich, even though we may not have lots of money or material goods. And I want you to know, understand right here, that I'm not talking about a prosperity gospel or somehow some guarantee of financial prosperity. That's not the core. It's not the idea of what I'm preaching here and teaching you and going to show you from the Bible today. One or the other may or may not come. You may have financial prosperity. You may have financial poverty. One or the other is likely to come. However, there are enormous and multiple dimensions of poverty and prosperity that are not material in nature. Lots of ways you can be poor while you have money, and lots of the ways that you can be rich and not have money. They're there, possibilities. Jesus said it this way in Luke 12:15, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things that he possesses." Jesus went on to speak a parable to his apostles, and I might say to us, so much of what is said in the Bible is for us. These messages are timeless here. So he went on to speak a parable to them, which illustrates how fragile life is and how quickly and how suddenly any one of us can be fully separated from all of our material goods. Just in a blink of an eye, you had it and you don't. You saw it and you don't. It was there, but it's no longer there anymore. The richest and strongest of us is helpless before death. And maybe even not just death, but before a stroke or a debilitating heart attack or a bullet or a car wreck that maybe would leave us, but we're not dead, but we're not able to function anymore. Certainly not in any sense like. And all the material goods, that place away where you can go and just enjoy yourself, a vacation home, or a nice amount of money that gives you security in your own home, those can just vanish like a morning fog, just quickly get away from us. Luke 6:38 specifically addresses connections between the gift and the giver. And I'm about to read this verse, Luke 6 and verse 38, and show you three of those connections. So in Luke, and I want you to remember here that Jesus is doing the talking in this particular place. Here's what he says, verse 38. "Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together, and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that you met withal, it shall be measured to you." Again, I said there are three connections between the gift and the giver that are all seen in this one verse. The first of those is that God uses giving to bless givers. That seems so simple and so easy. Notice what he said. Give, that's an imperative from God. The "you" is simply understood. You give. This is not a suggestion. It is not an opinion or an option per se. It's an imperative command. We're to be givers and not getters or takers only. Not just when it comes to what we would give to the Lord and His work, but in our lives, in a general sense. And I suspect already it's beginning to dawn on you. You're not trying to think about it, but sort of coming out of the depth of your thinking are some people that you already know are getters. They're takers, always expecting to receive. We're in an era of government, an era of thinking, a socialistic type of rationale in our country and much of the world today, where people, especially the newer generations, are thinking, "You owe it to me. I expect it." And the things should be set up. It's not really that you're giving me some gift. It's an entitlement. I'm entitled to be taken care of from the cradle to the grave. We're to be givers, believers, people who know Jesus Christ are not to be getters and takers. We are servants. The Bible uses that term to define who we really are, servants. And by definition, servants are to serve. Servants are to give. That's just simple. I mean, it's just common sense stuff. Ephesians 2 and verse 10 says that we are his creation, the creation of Jesus Christ. When we're saved, we become his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus unto good works. What is our job? To work, to serve God, to do right. How do we serve God? Not just by coming to church, doing a few good things, saying a few prayers. That's a part of the mix. But the mix is so much broader. We serve God by how we treat our husband and our wife. We serve God by how we treat our neighbors. We serve God by the kind of job we do when we go to our paid job. We serve God as a neighbor. We serve God in politics. Yes, we're servants of God. We're to be givers in all of these realms or areas of our lives. We're his workmanship, saved for that purpose to save or to serve. The giving of our lives, our time, talent, our treasures, is not something we just do to get brownie points. It's our reasonable service. That's what Romans says in chapter 12, verse 1, that we're to give our reasonable service, be givers of ourselves. That's what we ought to be doing. Nobody is exempted here. Don't say and do not. Don't say, well, I want to be a good servant, and then sit around expecting to be served and doing nothing to help somebody or to contribute to somebody. And don't say that you can't. I can't serve. Everybody can serve. One way or another, we can give. We may not have money. Simon Peter said, silver and gold have I none, but such as I have, give I thee. And everybody has something, and everybody can give it. Everybody ought to be, every one of us ought to be doing that. And isn't it a blessing? Isn't it a joy to you to be around people that you know are givers, who are not expecting to be just taking, but always giving? Sometimes I've talked to young preachers, and I hear them say, I feel like I'm just used up. Because often in this ministry, when you're especially pastoring a church, you become everybody's somebody, and you're supposed to be an expert on everything, and people are always coming for one thing or another, counseling, money, or something, answers in their lives. I have personally at times felt like a battery that is just needing a charge. No generator hooked to me. I'm just giving and not getting very much. Hardly anybody coming to contribute something, even encouragement, just often giving and giving, and that's a good thing to be able to give. But I'll tell you, sometimes when we give, we can just run out of energy. It is good to receive. It is good to give, but it is good to receive. And when you're getting from somebody, remember that you should give something back. Teachers ought to receive from the students blessings from those messages, those lessons that they are taught. That's clearly seen in the Bible. Giving is the nature. It's the very character of God. For God so loved the world that he gave. He gave his son, his only begotten son, to die on the cross. He gives us our benefits day by day. All that we have comes from the God of heaven, who is a giver, and we also should be givers. God gave us this wonderful world in which we live. It's not too much for him to ask us to turn around and be givers in our life, to give to him, and in turn to give to one another. Yes, he daily loadeth us with benefits. Thank God for his giving spirit. We say, I would like to be more Christ-like. How do you do that? One of the ways is to be a giver. Not just a receiver, but a taker. That's how God is. He expects us, and he commands us to follow example. And in our text, Luke 6 and verse 38, He starts the verse by saying, you give, or give, which the you, remember, is understood. You give. That's his command to all of us. The imperative to give is followed immediately by God's promise to give back to the giver. He said, you give, and then he turns right around and says, I'm going to give back to you. As you give, you shall receive. It's going to be that way. Give, and it shall be given to you. Notice the connection. They're just tied together. Givers get. They get not necessarily what some of them think they ought to get, but God gives. And they always thus get back. And this is a promise. And Jesus made the promise. And he tied the gift and the giver together right here with this statement. He said that when you give, you're going to get something in return. The connection between the gift and the giver is really a law of nature. It's like a cause and effect. You give and you shall get. It's there. It's inescapable. You cannot expect to make money unless you invest and use the money that you have. Here's what Jesus said. Verily, verily, with emphasis here, truly, truly, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. John 12, that's verse 24. You cannot hoard seed and expect to have a harvest. You know, in me, there's some country boy, lots of it. I grew up on a little East Texas farm, and we had a garden, about an acre. We planted it in the spring about this time of year. It was tilled up and rowed up, and we put, had a garden. We put seed in the ground. So it sort of got into my system, and I've had some gardens, but in the little postage stamp lot where we live now, there's really not room for a garden per se, just some flowers, but not a real garden. But the itch has been there, so this year I ordered some grow boxes. Some of you may know what they are. You're about this wide and about this long and about this deep and about this much water at the bottom in a tank, and then some soil on top with some little corridors that soak up the water. And you put their plants, two or three plants, in the little grow boxes out there. And there's some fertilizer in there. And all you got to do, according to what they say, is just keep them watered and keep trellis up there. So I have been wanting some tomatoes. And some of you good. I mean, Jim Crowder's given me a lot of little small cherry tomatoes. And Richard Kovach, he just brings me big old fat tomatoes. And usually they last about a day at the house. You know, and eat them all up. Well, this year I'm going to try. I'm going to have some. You know what I found out? You can't expect tomatoes if you don't plant some tomato plants. Boy, you got to really be smart to get hold of that, haven't you? Yeah. You kind of wonder why people can't get a hold of that in the whole of their lives. You can't expect blessings if you're not a blesser. If you're just a hoarder and you just get and you do not give, you cannot expect to be getting and having real satisfaction deep and so. Even at a gym, you learn you have to give to your muscles. If you want to have big, strong biceps, what do you got to do? You got to do this and this and put a little weight out here and do this and this and watch them grow and so with all the rest of your muscles in your body. It's a nature law. It's just built in. You get what you give. If you don't give, you cannot expect to get. It's not to be expected. Be not deceived. God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Galatians chapter 6, right out of the Bible, that's verse 7. To love, you have to give love. You say, well, I don't find many people friendly in my life. Have you looked at yourself? How friendly are you? He that would have friends must invest in friends and be friendly. He that must friend must be friendly. Yeah, it's just wherever you look, you just see there's the principle. If I'm going to have friends and expect people to be nice and open and warm with me, I'm going to have to be a friend. I'm going to have to open up. I'm going to have to show some of this warmth and some of this kindness to some other folks. lot of people are void of lots of things. I hear it. I'm around in a good many lives, and I hear people complaining about what they don't have. And so many times as I've heard those complaints, the thought has come to me, how many have you helped? How much giving are you doing? I see people go to church. They get out of church. And they get all bent out of shape. Well, nobody called me. Nobody came to see me. I was in the hospital and nobody visited me. And I got upset and I was ready to leave another church and the preacher didn't come down and call me. And I have to, how many did you ever call? How many people have you ever visited in the hospital? How many people have you ever given to in the sense that you reached out, got out of your comfort zone and tried to help somebody? It's easy to expect what we do not do. It's easy to somehow think, for me, God's going to violate this give and get, this connection between giver and getter, and it's going to be different for me. I have a right to expect it to be different in my case. I don't have to do it, but I sure expect it to be done. Don't misunderstand. What I'm saying here is not a guarantee of financial gain as a result of giving money. I want to say that because prosperity gospel is around. If you watch much TV, you got to know that there are preachers saying, well, you send in so much money here and you give to this and I'll guarantee you this lifestyle and this increase in your life. You may gain financially, but the return on your gift may not be financial gain. When you give like out of your heart, joyfully, gladly, by choice, not because you have to, but because you choose to do so, you may receive joy. I have done that. I have given to some people some things, and it was a joy to see their response, just to see the need was met and the humble gratitude that some people who I've been on that end, both ends of that equation on occasions, and it's wonderful to give and not get back money, but to get back happiness and some deep satisfaction and some strengthened faith and some blessings that come your way in a totally unexpected way. Have you had that happen? You know, here you are, you've just given something to the Lord and you forgot about it, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, we call it in East Texas, out of the blue, here comes along a blessing. You didn't even see it coming. You didn't expect it. You didn't know it. God just, let me tell you, I've said many times, I'm going to repeat, you can't play chess with God and expect to give him a checkmate. He always has more blessings than you can give. He always can do bigger for you than you can do for him. I will repeat this statement. We have a thimble. God has a dump truck. He has a fleet of dump trucks. He can override you and bless you more than you can expect. He knows how to do that. I'm not saying that if you give something, he's going to just put a dump truck load right on you right away. He may do it. I think most Americans are living with a dump truck load of blessings just being free. And in this society where people can get a job, and people are free to go up and down the streets and do so many things. And yet most Americans are complaining. Do you realize that most Americans that have $1,000 in the bank are richer than 95% of the world? I mean, it's just amazing how that we take for granted the blessings of God. And always we're looking for what we do not have. Keep in mind that God's payback is not limited to money and material goods. Yes, he has money, and he may give you some money, but he may repay you in a very different way and many other ways. Money's good, but I assure you that some things are far more valuable than money, like your health. Boy, oh boy, like your health, and happiness, and peace, and contentment. Money cannot solve everything, but I will tell you that money can bring lots of woes. I'm in the book of James right now. I'm about to read James chapter 5, the first three verses. Go to now, you rich men, He's talking here about people got a lot of money or material goods. You rich men weep and howl. Why would a guy with lots of money and lots of property and lots of power weep and howl? They do it. Yeah. Sometimes people jump out of tall buildings, particularly when Wall Street messes up pretty big. Look at the rest of the verse. For your miseries that shall come upon you, your riches are corrupted, your garments are moth-eaten, your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and ye shall eat your flesh as it were fire. You have heaped up treasure together for the last days, but yet it's lost. Here are these people James is talking about who made it from a material standpoint, but who didn't have the joy, didn't have the happiness. On this little sheet of paper, I have a statement that I'm going to read in your hearing. I printed it off the internet. Steve Jobs died a billionaire at age 56. This is his final essay. And I'm quoting here, it's all in quotes. I reached the pinnacle of success in the business world. In some others' eyes, my life is the epitome of success. However, aside from work, I have little joy. Steve Jobs, a billionaire. In the end, my wealth is only a fact of life that I'm accustomed to. At this moment, lying on my bed and recalling my life, I realize that all the recognition and wealth that I took so much pride in have paled and become meaningless in the face of my death. Talking about a guy, you know, who just died not long ago, who was the picture of success, the kind of guy that a guy or a girl, especially a young one, would look to say, I would like to do that, boy, I'd like. He says, Job says, you can employ someone to drive the car for you, make money for you, but you cannot have someone bear your sickness for you. Material things lost can be found or replaced, but there is one thing that can never be found when it's lost, life. Whichever stage in life you are in right now, with time, you will face the day when the curtain comes down. Treasure love for your family, love for your spouse, love for your friends. Treat yourself well and cherish others. As we grow older and hopefully wiser, we realize that a $300 or a $30 watch both tell the same time. You will realize that your true inner happiness does not come from the material things of this world. Whether you fly first class or economy, if the plane goes down, you go down with it. I was sorry to hear nothing much about knowing Christ in that relationship. I don't know what he knew or who he knew, if he knew Christ and was even a professing believer. I never heard that. But what I do know is that there is something outside of money that gives help. And you can have lots of money, as this story well illustrates, and still be a miserable person. I will tell you that God guarantees your gift, when you give to him, will multiply. Jesus said, lay up treasures for yourself in heaven, where there are no thieves, and there's no rust, and there's no moth, no corruption up there. It's good to give here and see the benefits that accrue from giving here. It's good and even better to see that when you give yourself to the Lord, not just your money, to some of it to the church, but when you give yourself to the good pursuit of things that are holy and good and helpful, you're laying up some treasures over there. So that when you are there with the Lord, there are going to be some great rewards. God uses giving to bless givers. There's a connection between the gift and the giver. Giving and givers receive in proportion to their giving. I'll not spend much time here, but look at this verse again. For with the same measure that you met or give, with all our, in that same way it shall be measured, are given to you again. That's right in the promise. That's the second of these ideas that you see about giving and these connections between the gift and the giver. There's a mutual connection. Yes, a mutual connection by how much you give and how much you give. You can't expect to plant 1 acre and receive a 9-acre harvest. Up at Jacksonville, Texas, there was a time when there were fields. I mean, like hundreds of acres of tomatoes. And you talk about it. They have a tomato festival. A tomato festival up there in the middle of the... I have 4 planters. 4 in my house. I have some tomatoes. And I have 1 cucumber for Margaret. She likes cucumbers. So I don't expect to receive an acre's worth of tomatoes. I don't know what I would do with them if I had them, to tell you the truth. I'm just planted enough for me. Yet somehow people do a little thing, and the rest of their life they think, well, I should be rewarded for what I do. You give, and you get what you give. In proportion to that which you sow, that you also reap. Not enough giving of love and respect. That may be your problem if you do not have people that really love you and respect you and show great concern and great love and outreach for you and giving to you. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together, running over, shall men give into your bosom. That's the continuance in the verse here. Jesus doing the talking. If I've ever heard a call for liberality, this is it right here. I mean, not only is it said over in the 9th chapter of 2 Corinthians, but right here, yes, give, and then people will give back, or God will see to that you receive. To get, give. To get more, give more. As I said, if you want more love, be more lovable. If you want more kindness, be kinder. If you don't like people making smart remarks to you, get the file to your tongue. Take care of yours. I'm talking about doing things that pay off in the long haul. There's a direct connection between how much you give and how much you get. Do not expect more from your mate or from your job or from your family or from your church if you do not give more. You'd like to have a better church, if you'd like to see a better Northwest Baptist church, then you need to give more of yourself to it. You'd like to see a better wife, give more of yourself to her. Likewise, it's just across the board, as I've been indicating here. So, to ensure a generous return, do not be stingy. He that hath a bountiful eye shall be blessed. Proverbs 22 and verse 9. Proverbs 11, verses 24, 25, and 26 talk along the same line. Here's verse 24. There is that scattereth, and yet increaseth. And there is that withholdeth more than his meat, but it tends to poverty. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it. Here it is, across the board. It seemed like everywhere you look in the Bible, there it pops up. Everywhere you look in real life, there it pops up. You see the connection between givers and getters, and those who are stingy invariably find themselves deprived. Finally, failure to give brings people to poverty. What it says. Failure to give brings people to poverty. That fact is implied, I think, in Jesus' statement about giving. It's pretty obvious that those who don't give do not get. Do not exercise, and the benefits of exercise will not be there, and your doctor will get all over your case as you get older because you ate too much and didn't exercise enough, and he will tell you how important that is. Don't give yourself to education, and you'll find yourself growing up to be ignorant and not very employable. You won't know how to do anything that somebody's willing to pay to get you to do. Don't give yourself to your marriage, and you find your marriage to be poor. not what you wanted out of it, and thought it may even die. Don't give to your church, and it will suffer. If enough people neglect their church will die. That's happened through the history of the world, from the Bible's churches right down until now. Churches just keep dying. One of them died just down the street, two blocks, Oak Forest. I think it was, not Oak Forest's name, but right on the left, just down there, about two blocks. I just received word, I haven't confirmed it, that Garden Oaks Baptist Church is shutting the doors. This church is not immune. You can't decide, I'm going to do something else on Sundays, and I'm not going to put my money there or anything, expect Northwest Baptist Church to have a bright future. It's good to be here now and enjoy where we are, but we have to give to get. If we're going to get a good church and it's going to sustain, then we have to give ourselves. And there are going to be some hardships, and there are going to be some things we don't like, but we have to work together for the common good and give to it, because if we don't give to our church, it will suffer, and you'll miss the blessings of a healthy, strong, Bible-believing church. It's pretty obvious that poverty, be it monetary poverty or spiritual poverty, will be in proportion to how stingy, miserly, or greedy, or covetous a person is, as opposed to being generous and giving. The lazier, the greedier, the stingier, the more covetous a person is, the greater the poverty in that person's life will be, regardless of that person's monetary wealth. Go with me, or come with me, to the book of Ecclesiastes. I'm now in the fifth chapter. I'm about to read in your hearing, starting with verse 10 through verse 14. Here's chapter 5, verse 10 of Ecclesiastes. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver. Eh? Nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eye? Well, I just look at it and I got it. That's it. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. Well, there is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely, riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. That'd be a good verse to just put in your memory bank. Riches kept by their owners to their hurt. But those riches perish by evil travail. He begetteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand. I'll stop the reading there. We would all do well to read verses. Get into the Bible and see what it says, and then see how accurate the Bible is with what you observe in the world around us, and it's going on in front of our eyes. He that is greedy of gain troubleth his own soul. Proverbs 15 and verse 27. Oh, yes, there is that withholdeth more than his meat, but it tendeth to poverty. That's chapter 11 of Proverbs, and that 24th verse. People can be like the church of the Laodiceans. Here's what God said to that church. Thou sayest, I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. Revelation 3:17. That church had money and statue, but it was poor, and that church died. It went belly up like the two churches I mentioned nearby us. That can happen to this church. And it will happen to this church unless we give to it, really not just our money, but give to its welfare. But this, remember, is a message to a church that is applicable to us. We, personally, can be well-to-do, dress in a nice suit, have a nice car, money in the bank, some good investments, and be well thought of or respected by those who are around us, and inside be very poor. I started this message talking about how easy it is to be poor of spirit, not in the good sense of the word, but poor in the sense that we're covetous and miserable and unfulfilled, and our lives are just drudgery. And a guy like Steve Jobs saying, hey, I had the money, everything you could possibly ever hope for I could buy, but there was something missing in me. Something was not fulfilling in me. Giving is like planting a seed. Hold it, and it produces nothing. But give it away, plant it, put it in the soil, let it turn back, go back, die in the soil. And what does it do? The rewards are limitless. I'm in the book of Psalms now. I'm in chapter 126, and I want you to hear these verses. They're 5 and 6, or 5 and 6. They that sow in tears shall reap in joy. Here's another statement. I mean, that same thing. Yeah. He that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. For you are not country people. Understand that there's a difference between just a piece of wheat or some other grain, you know, a little part that you take right off the vine there, off the plant there, and a sheave. I mean, he that goeth forth and weepeth bearing precious seed shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bring his sheaves. I mean, it's like an increase is built into the picture here. You go and put a seed out there, and you come in with a whole stock full of grain, and each one of those stocks, I mean, each one of those shoots has lots of grain. I planted lots of corn in my days. But one grain of corn in an East Texas soil, and watch it so you hope the crows don't come down and pull the seed out, and you can manage to get by. You plant that one seed in, and you got a row of corn, and it comes up, and you take one ear off. And sometimes that field corn will produce 3 ears. We call 2 good ears and the nubbin, a little bitty ear down here. But even on the nubbin, a little ear down here, there are many seeds. One grain or seed of corn put in the ground turned into a whole ear, I mean, with several hundred grains of corn on it. It's this principle. This connection between the gift and the giver, that the giver gets in proportion and in much greater proportion when he gives the right spirit to that which he actually sowed. So I say to us today, the question is, as the old saying is, it's not how many acorns are in an oak, but how many oaks are in an acorn. How much would you invest? And are you investing? You can't expect 1 acorn tree, let alone a forest, unless somebody plants a seed. We have to give to hoard it. Did you know that you can go probably to HEB or Kroger's where you live and buy some Indian corn? You know that corn, especially in the fall, that's many colors, some kind of red and some whites and yellows, and you know, it's really colorful corn, nice for Christmas. It's Anasazi Indian corn. You know that story. If you've ever been to Mesa Verde out of Cortez, Colorado, just right along the New Mexico border, you can go out on the Mesa Verde National Park and you can see lots of where the Anasazi Indians lived. And one is a treehouse cave. It's the one that was first found by some ranchers from down in New Mexico. They came up there and they couldn't believe what they saw. So it became an archaeological site, and it's turned to that. And when they were digging in the treehouse cave, going back in, it's just way back in there, and they had a whole little city really around it. You know what they found? They found a big container, about this big around, of corn. Corn. Just been there all that time. University of Arizona did the dig. They found the corn. You know what? That urn container don't know how many grains of corn it had. It had been sitting there, they've surmised, for at least 300 years and had not produced one more grain of corn. Not one. But they decided to take some of that corn and plant it. Do just what the Bible teaches we ought to do with our lives. Give it. They planted some of that, and guess what? It sprouted. It's germinated after all that long and started to grow. And they planted some more and some more. And you can go down to the grocery store about Christmas time and buy some of it. It's a good testimony of what happens when you give. But it's also an indicator of what happens when you don't give yourself. You just hoard it, put it back in the end of a cave somewhere, and you'll die and leave it to your kids and they'll fight over it. But if you're willing to give yourself, I'm not talking about just as I said to the church, I'm talking about give your life. Be a giver. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, heaped down, shall men give into your bosom. Let's stand. Father, thank you for the privilege of letting me share this message about life. A message about life and how we ought to live it, how we ought to give it, invest it. Invest it for you because you have the ability to pay us back lots of good ways. Oh God, you are so thorough in your word to warn us about covetousness and miserliness and hoarding and keeping it to ourselves and not reaching out. Help us not to be there, but help us to do what Jesus clearly taught, not only in this great verse, but in lots of other places in the Bible, that it's better to give than to receive. That every one of us should see the connection and make givers out of our own selves. If it's not happening, we ought to make it start happening. We can. It's a choice. I pray that you'll bless this invitation. You know whose heart's been touched. You know who needs to come, get some things right, perhaps become a part of this church. May that happen. But especially, may every one of us walk out these doors a better person, knowing we've heard a message from you about our lives and how they ought to be invested. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.